Graham, what is the situation going on in Donetsk now?
Well, I was at the airport yesterday, as we know, that's been the scene of some clashes going back months. In fact, since the start of June, it's been closed. And we're talking about an airport that was renovated before Euro 2012, so it was a world-leading facility at the time, regarded as one of the best in Europe. But since early June, it's just been a battle scene. And of course, we were talking of the ceasefire in recent times, but I went there yesterday, and the whole area, I mean, we're not talking about just the airport, we're talking about the whole territory around that is one massive, just ongoing, ferocious battle at the moment. I was right next to it, and there were explosions going off almost every minute. I mean, we're talking about all-day explosions, massive clouds of smoke, gunfire going on, and we've got ferocious clashes going on as we've had these figures, such as it's, you know, whatever percent in control of the Novorossiya militia, 90% was circulated, but it's more complicated than that. I mean, we're talking about a vast territory that the Ukrainians are still clinging on to, and how they're doing that is they're remaining underground. There's a lot of underground tunnels in the territory, and then they're emerging, fighting, but they're also shelling in from the outside. So we had losses on the side of the Novorossiya forces yesterday. We also heavy losses on the side. It's estimated over 4,000 Ukrainian soldiers killed at that site, which they're furiously hanging on to. We have that ferociously. I wasn't at that scene today. I was a little bit outside of Donetsk. But it's still an ongoing, extremely volatile, hostile war situation out at the airport in Donetsk. And they're still shelling in the city. We had a report of 8 people. This is killed yesterday. I was at Donetsk morgue today. You've got a truck full of bodies of civilians killed by Ukrainian shelling, which is hitting the Kievsky, namely the Kievsky region of the city of Donetsk. So we've got an ongoing war situation, which is impacting both at the airport, which is a battle scene, but both the city and the airport are under shelling, are under a war situation. We do have civilians here being killed every day at the moment in Donetsk, because it is an ongoing war situation. Over 5 months now.
Graham, if I understand you correctly, you keep repeating it. There's an ongoing battle situation in Donetsk now. So are you in any danger?
I think if you are in the city itself of Donetsk, the central area that's kind of out of range, then that's more or less, you know, you would hope that that's more or less okay. There's not much kind of sign of shelling around Lenin Square and the Artyom Street. But then if you go towards the airport, the Kievsky region, which is where the Ukrainians were shelling in from the side of the airport where they were based, then, I mean, you know, we're talking about some horrific, just, I mean, I was in the hospital the other day, you know, there's a 22-year-old girl there, 22-year-old girl, Luba, lost a leg, had that blown off when Ukrainian shelling hit her husband last week, and she was with her husband. She also lost her mum, her husband's mother, her husband's grandmother, and she's crippled, third-degree burns. You've got a hospital full of that, full of victims, missing limbs, covered in burns. So if you're in parts of the city that these people live in, I mean, these are residential regions, residential areas that are being shelled. And, of course, that's dangerous. That's dangerous there, and shelling is still coming in. And we even had, of course, the Red Cross worker killed the other day. So, I mean, you can't in any case classify Donetsk as anything other than a war zone, which is what it is. And like everyone here, you simply watch your step and you kind of tread carefully and try to kind of stay alive and watch out for what's coming. And there are areas that are just hotspots, but the city itself, all of the city is under the state, is under the war environment, that you just feel it and you see it in people's faces, that they're absolutely drained. I mean, this has been going on for a long time now.
If I understand you correctly, it would seem as if the Ukrainian military is actually shelling not only Donetsk airport, but is actually shelling a residential or city area as well. How can this be if Poroshenko had signed the Minsk Protocol several weeks ago?
Well, because I have experience. The last time I was taken captive of the two sons at the Donetsk airport, and so I've experienced the Ukrainian military. I've spoken to them. I've spent extensive periods of time I was in captivity. And, I mean, they don't answer to Poroshenko. In fact, they think it's the other way around. After Euromaidan, that Poroshenko is at their beck and call. So Poroshenko can't control them. What he can do is he can give the appearance of that. So he's making out there's a ceasefire, and everyone, you know, in the West, is sort of turning a blind eye and trying to pretend there's this make-believe ceasefire that Poroshenko needs to perpetuate, because the reality is that he can't impose a ceasefire because his troops don't listen to him, because they don't regard him as being anything other than a totem, than a figurehead, because of the fallout of the Maidan situation. You've empowered factions to give them more power than a president. So, I mean, these guys that are here, I mean, I was just out at a town in the outskirts of outside Donetsk today, Ilovaisk, and I was speaking to people that met the infamous Azov battalion And they were saying that, you know, these guys come with swastikas in their helmets, cars with swastikas on them. These guys are fighting their own war, and it's a war that's nothing to do with whatever Poroshenko is making it out to be. I mean, this is what they'll tell you in Donetsk. This is pure fascism. What other way can you call something that deliberately targets?
That leads me to my next question, then. Are the people that are shelling the region, or the people that are shelling the residential areas, are they proper Ukrainian forces, or are they more from the right sector, or from Svoboda, or from other fascist or Nazi groups?
Well, you can almost say there's no such thing as proper Ukrainian forces anymore. I mean, they've all been kind of put together in this amalgam, in this kind of melange of battalions thrown together with regular army. So now you just can't ascertain which is which, and it almost makes no odds anymore. But then, you know, you have to also kind of consider that these are victims in their own way. I mean, these are misguided young men who got kind of all jumped up in this Euromaidan polemic of them being heroes that have been sent out to fight this war. And it's a war that their government, you know, doesn't care about them. I was at an unmarked grave of Ukrainian soldiers the other day, seven of them in there. One of them, it had been confirmed who it was, and only through a SIM card in a blown-up military vehicle that had been retained and then called on by the Novorossiya forces to try and verify who this guy was. And his family in Dnipropetrovsk then tried to come and claim him, but the Ukrainian forces stopped them from coming to claim their family member who had been lying in a field in bits for days, because the Ukrainians don't collect their dead, because if they do, then they have to pay the family. So, I mean, on the other side, you've got these guys that think that they're fighting for whatever it is, for whatever polemic or, you know, fascist, as they call it here in Donetsk, that they're finding their motivation. But you've got a Kiev which divests itself of any responsibility for them, which is sending them off to be in many cases killed, but also before that to inflict death on a civilian population here in the east. And then they die in Kiev, and Kiev just denies they exist, basically, that they ever existed.
Well, if I understand you correctly, basically the picture that you're painting is that Kiev, as you said, has divested itself, so they're no longer paying attention to what's happening. However, the fascists or Svoboda or the right sector, or probably even worse groups, are running around and are shelling and killing civilians.
Well, and that's particularly the strategic importance of the airport. Is that that's where they shelled the city from. So, I mean, you could almost say that that's why they're clinging on to it so ferociously. I mean, and we're talking about the sites that are hit. I mean, I've been around several schools today in the area, and all of them have been hit by shelling. I mean, you know, you actually look at the targets, and it's not difficult. If you're a military an artillery operator, it isn't difficult. I mean, I've been with the Novorossiya side when they were firing grads. And it isn't difficult, as they explained to me, to hit your target. You look at Google Maps, you look at the range, and then you fire. So the question is, why haven't Ukrainians here hit targets such as the bases of the Opolchen, as they're called? This is the Novorossiya militia. Why haven't they hit their bases? Why haven't they hit the sites that the Novorossiya militia are occupying? Why have they targeted schools? Why have they targeted residential areas? Why have they targeted even, a woman said to me in Lugansk, it's like they're targeting places where they know that Zastra Market had been hit there in Lugansk last month. It's like they're targeting places that they know a lot of people will be. And then from the other side, I remember my own experience last time with the Ukrainian military, of them saying to me, you know, you've come from Donetsk. You know that everyone in Donetsk is a separatist, is a terrorist. And they're, you know, under this kind of strong propaganda polemic, which has brainwashed them. So they really think that they have this carte blanche, and they're empowered, and it's their duty to basically kill, to eliminate, to eradicate a civilian population that they then will tell you are separatists and terrorists. But it's not true. I mean, the people that they're killing, and then the Kiev side will say, why haven't they left? In many cases, they're killing the people too vulnerable to leave, people too old, people that didn't have enough money, people that simply didn't want to leave their homes. And these are the people. I mean, this girl, Luba, 22, you know, was sitting at home with her mum, husband's mum and grandmother, a Ukrainian rocket hit. And then that's it, you know, she's lost everyone. Husband is also severely injured, and she's a cripple, an invalid, and that's one of many stories. I mean, the hospital wards are full of people missing limbs, of people covered in burns. And you say to them, who's doing this to you? And they say, it's the Ukrainians. Who else? I mean, all this idea that is then being perpetuated of somehow the Novorossiya forces, you know, shelling their own areas, it just isn't the case at all. And no one here buys that.
Well, I suppose,
and that is as far from the truth as you can be.
I suppose you could make the argument that in a wartime scenario, one army has the duty and the obligation to kill all males of a certain age. But how are these people justifying the fact that they're actually shelling into residential areas and they're killing people, as you said, the weaker ones, the ones that couldn't leave the city? How do they justify the fact that they're actually killing women and children and shooting into schools?
Well, you know, I was at the Donetsk morgue today. There's an 80-year-old woman that was there. 80-year-old woman that's been wheeled in. But obviously, you know, if you look at 80, she's survived. You know, she survived World War II. She's seen that, but she hasn't survived this. An 80-year-old woman, just one of many civilian victims. I mean, children have been hit. You know, I was in Stakhanov, and there was a residential area that had been hit. There was a boy who had his thumb blown off, and then his mum was saying that her mother was now missing part of her brain after shelling had hit. That a grandfather had been killed in that area. I mean, the atrocities, the toll that's been taken on a civilian population. I mean, even yesterday, coming back from the airport, which is, as I described, was a fierce battlefield all day, there was a car there just in the road, just covered, you know, in shelling and the signs of shelling and shrapnel damage. There was blood on the driver's seat and there was brain just below that, human brain. And now, you know, people are walking past it and looking at this, and they're almost used to this. And I was at school today speaking to kids and saying, you know, what words come to mind. And they say to you, the first thing they say to you is bombing, is war. And then you say, what do you think of the Ukrainian side? And even kids will say to you, you know, these are fascists. And then these are kids that have got a dad in one case that had been taken captive by the Ukrainians. They've seen the most atrocious thing, the most appalling carnage. This is ongoing. But, I mean, it isn't anything that Poroshenko is reporting. It's something that the West is really trying to pretend isn't going on. Because if that's the case, then Poroshenko has to admit that he can't control his army. And then you have to acknowledge what there really is here is anarchy. It's basically, as they'll call it here, it isn't war, it's genocide.
Graham, I'd like to come back to that. But let me ask you this. You mentioned something very interesting earlier on in our conversation. And you mentioned that actually as the Ukrainian army or as the fascists themselves are being killed, they're leaving the bodies of their own soldiers or their own people laying in the fields for days. Could you expand upon this, please? It's really hard for me to wrap my head around this.
Well, you know, that was a battle scene at Kalinovo that I was at and gone there. That was the 18th of September. The Ukrainians had launched an attack and they'd lost at that site. It turned out it was seven men at that site. But we're talking about a lot of them were bits of bodies. And then the Novorossiya side had given them several days to come and claim their dead. And they hadn't done that. I mean, there's obviously a protocol of war, which is that you give the opposite side the opportunity to claim their dead. And the Novorossiya side said that they did that. And then I went along to watch these soldiers be buried. There was a cross made for them, and they were put in the ground. But that's seven. One of them was identified. So six guys who will never be identified. I mean, these are families. There was another Lugansk airport. I was there, and it was full of, you know, passports, Ukrainian passports, wallets with pictures of kids. I mean, these guys also have families. I mean, they're also, you know, whatever they're fighting for, we can describe it as fascist forces. These guys also have families and children who'll never know what happened to their father, who'll never know where their husband went. I was in this base, Lugansk airport, where they'd been, and they'd drawn things all over the wall, pictures of fighters, and then another base, they've drawn things like death to separatists. I mean, they really think that they're fighting this campaign against whatever they are told is the enemy, is the target, you know, terrorist, separatist. They've conflated it all in one, but, I mean, all they're doing is killing civilians. I was given a statistic in Stakhanov, it was Pervomaisk, by a member of the Novorossiya militia. And he said for every one militia member they've killed here, they've killed 20 civilians.
That's a shocking statement. Graham, you've been on the ground now for a while. Actually, you've been there for several months or even longer than that. But over the last several days, what are some of the more impressionable things that you've seen? What are some of the things that have had the largest impact on you?
I think you'd never want to become immune to these things. I mean, I just have come back from Donetsk morgue, and there was a truck there, and just a big blue, it's a death truck. It just goes around the city after shelling, and it picks up bodies. And I just opened the door an hour ago, a couple of hours ago, less than that. And I opened the door, and it's just a truck full of dead bodies. Just bodies there, and just lying, unclaimed. No one knows who they are, or family members haven't come for them. And that's what family members do now, is when they hear of shelling, they go to the morgue. But then some of these people have been killed. You know, they have no family. This 8-year-old woman, you know, she had no family. These people in the truck unclaimed. You know, often people have left and they've got no way of knowing what's happened to their relative. If they've gone, for example, fled to Russia, which a lot of people have from Donetsk cities, probably about half of its population have left. It's about 500,000. But then these people are then here that then get killed. And then family members don't know what's happened to them, or they're out of the city, or their contacts don't. So they just left there. I mean, there was a mass burial site outside Lugansk. And there were just people put in the ground, and all that was written was that it's just not known who this person was. A guy at the morgue assistant told me there that 30% of people, this is civilians that have come to the morgue, and it's unclear who they are. It's not known, and it'll never be known, because, I mean, relatives have left, and then those that are killed in many cases are the old, are the vulnerable, are those without family to care for them. So, you know, to have seen some shocking things like that is something that you always have to step back and say, it is exactly that. It's horrific, and never to become desensitized to that. I mean, there was the bus that filmed of the refugees who'd been fleeing Lugansk that had been hit by... It was right next to Ukrainian base. It obviously, they'd fired on it because it had been escorted by another Russian militia, and it was just skeletons, just remains of children, skeletons of children still with a form of a face, but a charred black skeleton of a child that was trying to flee war. You know, I've opened coffins to verify civilian fatalities in Lugansk, and seen people who are just almost completely eaten by maggots, because, I mean, the morgues are completely overrun. I mean, they're not having any funding, they're not having any support from the state, from Kiev. So, I mean, these people are even working unpaid, and they're absolutely no resources, having to deal with unprecedented amounts of bodies, of hospitals just overflowing with casualties. So, I mean, almost every day you can bring something that can really be a case of just saying that is just horrific, and you can't comprehend that this is happening in a country that I lived in for over 2 years before, that I remember as being a normal country, and now it's just a daily catastrophe.